It's gold. It's solid gold. There's gold in them there hills. That expression triggered the settlement of unknown lands in many parts of the world. Thousands of people followed that cry to California in 1849, growing the population there by 650% in just 1 year. Thousands followed it to Australia in 1851, causing the entire country's population to triple in the next 9 years. And in 1861, they rushed to New Zealand, where the population doubled in 6 years. Yes, the rush was on, and gold fever was spreading worldwide. Prospecting for these mineral riches was sweeping the planet as prospectors searched almost everywhere for the minerals to make them rich. In the world of selling, that search goes on today as salespeople prospect for buyers in the hope of becoming rich too. Well, let's start this session with a visit to the Old West. You've seen the prospector of the Old West, often portrayed as a dusty, bearded old man leading a mule through the desert, hoping to strike it rich by finding the mother lode of gold or silver. Following rumors or hunches, he unpacks his gear and begins the tiresome chore of pick and shovel work. In most cases, the old-timer never really strikes it rich, but sometimes, just through sheer luck, finds just enough precious metal to stay alive and go at it again. You might remember from your American history classes or from the movies the names of John Sutter and James Marshall. They were the ones who in 1848 at Sutter's Mill in California discovered gold nuggets just laying in the water by their mill. That chance discovery triggered the gold rush of 1849, and in 1 year, the population of California grew from 15,000 to over 100,000. Now, there are two reasons to tell you that story. Number one, both Sutter and Marshall died poor men. They never really got much gold. They really didn't even know how to prospect for it. And the second reason to tell you that story is that, unlike the movies sometimes portray, most miners never got rich. Now, sure, a few did. But do you know who really got rich in the gold rush of 1849? The salesmen, who sold the miners food and drink and clothing and equipment and entertainment. And they founded San Francisco and Sacramento. So that old prospector with a pack mule, pick, and a shovel wasn't on his way to the bank. He was more likely on his way to the poorhouse or just scraping by trying to stay alive. You know, we can see this very same scene repeated today, except the typical prospector has been replaced by the typical salesperson. And this typical salesperson is one who goes from person to person, town to town, state to state, or company to company, hoping to strike it rich, hoping to find the pot of gold. And unfortunately, it doesn't happen. Usually he earns just enough to stay alive and go at it again. And that's because he's doing it the hard way, the most difficult way possible. So how did the really professional prospector of the Old West go about his work? Much differently. First of all, he was an expert in geology. He understood rock formations. He studied chemical analysis. And he only started digging when he had sufficient physical evidence to justify the effort. This kind of prospector was a professional. He knew exactly what he was looking for. And when he found the right clues, he knew exactly what to do and how to do it. Those professional gold seekers knew what it took first to find the gold and then to mine it. Now, today, most of the gold comes from South Africa, almost twice as much as from the United States and Canada. And in these gold fields of South Africa, it takes 2 tons. I mean, that's 4,000 pounds of gold ore to produce less than 1 ounce of gold. Now, an ounce is only the weight of a typical letter you'd receive in the mail. So how do these miners know which 2 tons of rock to start crushing to find that tiny bit of gold? Well, they know what the clues are, and they know what they're looking for. And it's the same with true sales professionals of today. They know exactly what they're looking for in a prospect, what the clues are, and what to do when they find them. Do you know exactly what you're looking for in your prospects? In your account selling, do you have a reliable method of determining which of your existing customers or clients you should invest most of your time with? What clues do you look for? What prospecting method do you use to maximize your time and increase your income? Your most productive and profitable time as a sales professional is when you're face-to-face with a qualified, receptive prospect. Now, face-to-face, I mean, of course, in person. But in some situations, it might be by phone, fax, the internet, or video teleconferencing halfway around the world. The same principles apply, no matter what your specific situation may be. And this session is going to help you make sure that you're spending more of your time with your most highly qualified prospects. And if you have too many qualified prospects already, this session will help you become even more selective. In prospecting for gold and silver, there are many schools of thought. The same is true when it comes to sales prospecting. There are many approaches. Now, one way is to contact a lot of people and have faith in the law of averages. And according to this method, contacts determine contracts. The more people you contact, the more sales you're going to make. And you know, this may be true, but it's also a lot of work. It's a lot of hard work. Experience shows this method usually produces no more than one prospect out of every five contacts, or a ratio of 20%. So out of 100 contacts, you might be able to make 20 good selling presentations. And out of those 20 sales presentations, according to the law of averages, you'll probably make 4 sales. Again, 1 out of 5. Using this approach, it's possible to earn more money by making more contacts and working even harder. And this is the method that almost all beginning salespeople use, at least for the first year or two. But how do the top sales professionals do it? Much differently. The experienced professionals don't have a problem finding prospects. Their problem is finding the time to make their sales presentations. Now, working with these professionals, the top 1% club members, I found that they can make 10 contacts, which result in 8 good selling presentations, and close 6 or 7 sales. They work on a 4 out of 5 or an 80% ratio. Impossible, you say? Oh, not at all. Not when you go about it scientifically. So where do you see yourself in relation to these two extremely different methods of prospecting? At one end of the spectrum, we have the beginner with lots of time and not enough prospects. At the other end, we have a person with lots of prospects and not enough time. Which sounds like your situation? Do you want more prospects, or do you need a system to help you be more selective with the prospects you have? Well, what do your numbers tell you? By the way, do you have a favorite number? What is it? I mean, why do you like that number so much? What meaning does it hold for you? Well, after you've listened to this message, the number 10 should be at the top of your list. Now, of course, 10 could stand for a lot of different things. 10 fingers, 10 toes, the 10 in a deck of cards, or in a pair of dice, $10, 10 cents, a symbol for beauty, or a perfect score in gymnastics. Now, however, let's focus on 10 as the score you need to win the game of selling. And selling should be thought of as a game, because when you're good at something, very good at it, it becomes more fun. And when something is fun, and you're good at it, you can make a game out of it. Many years ago, when I first began selling, I spent 80% of my time making cold, direct contacts, 70 contacts a day on some days. I just hoped I would find a hot one. And sometimes I did. But it was just out of dumb luck. I struggled along that way for almost a year, until I decided there just had to be a better way. Have you ever had that kind of experience where your problems, your lack of results, forced you to improve? Well, in my case, after knocking on over 1,200 doors during that first 8 weeks in the field, I had earned a grand total of just $48. I mean, no matter how hard you try, even way back then, $48 in 8 weeks just doesn't go very far. I was like the old amateur prospector out west, digging aimlessly, hoping to strike it rich. The odds were against him, and they certainly were against me, too. But it was this very struggle that helped me find a better way. And part of that better way was a system I devised to divide my prospects into 3 categories. Here's how it would work for you. First, you have the Class A prospect, the gold one. This is a person who has a need for your product, is aware of that need, has the money or the ability to get the money to buy it, knows about you and your company, and would be receptive to talking with you. Next, you have the Class B prospect, the silver one. Now, this is a person who might become a Class A prospect, but you don't have sufficient information yet to be sure. And finally, the Class C prospect, nothing but fool's gold. This is a person, period. Just a name. And the phone book is filled with these Class C prospects. Now, here's a question. How much of your time is spent with Class A, Class B, and Class C prospects? Your income and your success in selling will be in direct proportion to the time you spend with those Class A golden prospects. But how do you find those Class A's? Just like the professional prospector did. You become an expert. You learn the clues. So what are some of the clues that you can look for? Well, let's say that you're selling computer networking systems as an example. There, the goal in prospecting would be to find companies that are growing and expanding and need to update their present systems. In selling financial services, it's finding people who are concerned enough about the future to make financial plans now. For pharmaceutical sales reps, it's finding physicians whose area of specialty requires them to know about the latest drugs and their application. In selling to dealers and distributors, the wholesale or account sales professional has to know who to spend time with, which account will provide the maximum return. For investment professionals, the goal is to find people with money to invest. For auto insurance, it might be finding a prospect whose current coverage is about to expire and is interested in changing insurance carriers. For food service professionals, it might be calling on restaurants, hotels, and commissaries that are currently using your line and may be expanding their operations. In every type of selling, you have to find the right prospect at the right time, whether it's aircraft, automobiles, or air conditioning, educational programs, furniture, or medical supplies, office equipment, pharmaceuticals, or investments, appliances, construction products, chemicals, or anything else. The determining factor is, are you just using the quantity approach, seeing enough people and working on a 20% closing ratio, or are you selling through the quality approach, limiting your contacts and working on an 80% closing ratio? Here's the idea that improved my selling results way back in 1967 from one of constant cold calling, digging through mountains of fool's gold before I found one real prospect, to having more prospects than I could possibly see. After just 1 year of using this system, I made 42 contacts during a three-week period, made 37 sales presentations, and closed 32 sales. That's an 86.5% closing ratio. Impossible? Oh, no. Not when they were all Class A golden prospects. I've named this selling system 10 to Win. When you adapt it to your situation, it can help you find prospects that you have a good possibility of selling to. Or, if you're in account selling, it can help you determine which of your existing customers you should spend most of your time with by knowing exactly what you're looking for. Notice I just said most of your time with. If you work in assigned territory, it's vital that you see every possible prospect in your territory. And as you get to know each prospect and qualify those prospects through effective questioning, then you're going to know who's an A, who's a B, and who's just a C, a name. You know, people and their situations can change just as fast as technology is changing. A prospect who for the past year has been a total zero in your sales report suddenly makes a dramatic move in the business or in that large organization, and overnight they could become a vein of pure gold or maybe even a welcome stranger. Did you ever hear of the welcome stranger? Well, it's one of the largest gold nuggets ever found. It weighed over 200 pounds, and its gold content alone was worth over $1 million. It was a unique specimen. John Deason and Richard Oates found it in 1869 in Australia. Well, you might find your own welcome stranger if you keep working your territory, clients, or customer base, or your accounts. So I'm not suggesting you just stop making calls. I'm reminding you to call on your Class A prospects most often and still keep contact with those B's and C's until they become A's. Okay? So let's get started. As I mentioned earlier, by thinking of selling professionally as a game, in this game we have two players, the prospect and the salesperson. Oh, they play on the same team. That's right. They win together or they lose together. It's impossible for one to win if the other loses. And isn't that the way it should be in professional selling? Your prospects win when they become or remain your customers, and you win too. You paid a commission, a bonus, or a salary, and you feel the satisfaction of having helped someone, and you see yourself as successful. Now for the rules of the game. Both you and your prospect may be said to have certain qualities, and these qualities earn you points. Each quality is assigned a specific point value. When your points and your prospect's points together add up to a total of 10, you win. You make the sale, and they win. They invest. So let's first establish the qualities of a perfect sales professional, a perfect 10. Now keep in mind, the 10 qualities I've chosen only serve as an example. You need your own list of your specifics based on your own selling situation. Now I've chosen 5 qualities that are personal and 5 that are professional. Here they are: attitude, self-motivation, creativity, personality, organization, prospecting skill, presentation skill, closing skill, ability to handle objections, and being service-minded. If you assign 1 point to each of these 10 qualities, what you have is a salesperson who's a 10-pointer. But in this game, there's no such thing as a perfect 10. No salesperson is perfect. There are good, solid 7s and 8s. But in this game, no 10s. Well, how then do you reach a total of 10 and win? By adding your prospect score to your score. I'm going to show you how that works in a few minutes. But first, let's go back and expand on the 10 qualities of the ideal sales professional. First was attitude. This quality is first because it's most important. It includes expectancy, enthusiasm, energy, empathy, and opportunity awareness. A salesperson with a positive mental attitude is one who accepts complete personal responsibility for his or her success. They live by the motto, "If it is to be, it's up to me," which leaves no room for excuses about the economy, about marketing plans, about corporate policy, about management, territory, or pricing structure. Expectancy is having the confidence that you will succeed. It's acting as if you could not fail. I mean, how would you act with a prospect if you knew they would invest? Expect it, and you'll get it. That's what it means to sell it with the million-dollar attitude. To earn 1 full point for attitude, a salesperson must exhibit a high degree of enthusiasm. Now, I'm not talking about loud, raucous enthusiasm, but quiet, contagious enthusiasm built on confidence, calmness, and conviction. In part, this enthusiasm is expressed through one's own energy level. The sales professional who keeps an excellent mental and physical condition will maintain a high level of energy. Let me just say that weight control is an important element here. I mean, if you're carrying around 15 or 20 extra pounds, that can wear you out. And by the way, if you'd like a perfect diet, here it is. It's guaranteed to work. If it tastes good, spit it out. But seriously, stay in shape so you can maintain the energy and enthusiasm of a professional. You know, the first time I remember hearing about somebody espousing the idea of physical fitness was many years ago when a character named Jack LaLanne had a popular TV show. He was often called the Godfather of Fitness by the friendly media people, and a fitness nut and a crackpot by his critics. His show was watched by millions, and his enthusiasm was contagious. When he began lecturing about fitness training, it seemed almost all the experts were against him. Doctors said that working out with weights would give people heart attacks, they'd lose their sex drive, and women would begin looking like men. Coaches said people would get so muscle-bound they wouldn't be able to run or even be flexible. Others called him a charlatan. Well, you know, time is usually a great test of ideas. And the last time I saw Jack and his wife Elaine do an interview, he looked almost the same as he did years ago when I saw him on television. Only now he was 85 years old, and his wife of 40 years was 71. They both were doing a strenuous physical workout every single day, and it showed. I mean, they looked terrific. But in that interview, Jack said, quote, 50 years ago, I was considered a crackpot. Today, I'm an authority. And believe me, I can't die. It would ruin my image. I mean, you got to love a guy like that. And what an image he had. I mean, I can still remember watching on television years ago when Jack celebrated his 70th birthday. You know how he did it? He jumped into 60-degree water at 9:55 in the morning, and he went for a mile swim. And that swim took him 2.5 hours in the frigid water off of Long Beach, California. Now, could you do that? I mean, even at your age, just swimming for 2.5 hours? I mean, that would be tough. But wait, Jack added a few twists to that 1 mile swim. His hands were tied together. His feet were tied together. So all he could do was pull and kick and try to breathe. Oh yes, and he was pulling something through the water. 70 rowboats with 70 people on board. Oh yes, Jack pulled that small navy the 1 mile and achieved his goal. And Jack LaLanne is proof that as long as we're alive, we might as well be as fit as we can be. So do something today that would make Mr. Fitness proud of you. Okay, so in addition to expectancy, enthusiasm, and energy, we need empathy. The sales professional with empathy is sensitive to the needs of others. He really cares about what's best for the prospect. And in addition to empathy, we need opportunity awareness, to see that opportunity doesn't knock. It just lies there, waiting for someone to pick it up. When people with opportunity awareness don't find the situations or circumstances they want, they create them. Because they know that jobs don't have futures. People do. You'll find a lot more detail about attitude and these other personal qualities of excellence in the You Can Build a Better You listening program. And in that program, it focuses on ways that you can tap even more of your amazing potential. So how's your attitude? Do you deserve a full point for it? Next is the quality of self-motivation. And this is an often misunderstood and misused word. To clearly define motivation, just break it into three parts. Motives for action. An individual who has a motive for action, a goal, or an objective, is what we call self-motivated. In selling, it's the desire or the eagerness to go out and make contacts, presentations, and sales, with a realistic, attainable, and worthy goal in mind. The self-motivated salesperson isn't easily distracted or discouraged. That doesn't mean that times won't get tough. It just means the sales professional will be tougher. Have you ever noticed how much energy people have when their thoughts are dominated by a goal? That's what is meant by motivation. And on our list of qualities for the ideal salesperson, it's worth a full point. So are you self-motivated? You will be when you have a goal that's specific, realistic, and attainable. A motive for action. A good illustration of this quality of self-motivation is Cora Mack. Many years ago, when Judy and I first moved to Arizona, we met and came to know this great lady. Cora was in her 90s, and she was still active as a sales representative for an educational company. That's right, still selling. Well, not every day, but at least every week. Cora embodied this quality of self-motivation to the fullest. One day I asked her how she was able to be so positive, so energetic, after all of those years. And since she didn't sell everybody she presented to, how did she handle rejection? You know, I'll never forget what she told me. She said, "Joel, I'm tough. I'm a survivor. After what I've lived through, how could a prospect's objection ever get me discouraged? You see, if I could outrun Geronimo and his Chiricahua band of Apaches, I can survive a few resistant prospects." Geronimo? To me, Geronimo was somebody out of the movies or TV westerns. "Oh, yes," Cora said. "When I was a little girl, my family and I were heading back home to Safford in southern Arizona. Geronimo and his band tried to attack us, and we were able to get away. And way back then, I got rid of all my fears. And since that day, I'm fearless." Wow, what a lady, and what self-motivation. The third quality is creativity. Like Willie Cooley, thinking in new dimensions, finding out what everybody else is doing, and then not doing it. Willie didn't sit around with the other taxi drivers and complain about how bad business was. No, not Willie. Instead, he began doing all the things they weren't doing, like taking special care of his car's interior, developing a professional presentation book, and arranging for return rides. He was creative because he did the things that hardly anybody else was doing. It made him unique and brought him tremendous success. Are you exercising your creativity? If so, you can earn a full point for this quality in our 10 to win rating system. Let me share a story from my own selling experience that illustrates this concept of creativity, especially the idea of finding out what everybody else is doing and then not doing it. Judy got a call one day from the Mitsubishi Aircraft Company asking us to compete for a sales training assignment to train their aircraft salespeople. Now, I had already done a sales seminar for Cessna Aircraft, and Mitsubishi had heard about it and was calling us. After some very effective questioning, Judy found out that the decision makers for Mitsubishi had selected four of the sales trainers as candidates and had invited all of us to come and make a presentation on why we should be hired. The competition would be held at the Scottsdale Hilton, which was just two blocks from my home. Now, that actually was the deciding factor for us to participate, since we don't normally get involved in competitive situations. But this one was so close by, and it sounded kind of intriguing. Now, how about you and your selling? Do you ever get into a situation where your prospects tell you they're holding a competition? Well, sure you do, almost every day, if other companies have a similar product. Now, of course, in most situations, the prospect doesn't call it a competition. They just think of it as shopping around. Now, next time you know they're shopping around, Start off by asking yourself, how will these other salespeople be selling their product or service? Actually make a list. And then don't compete, create. Find out what everybody else is doing, and don't do it. So back to Mitsubishi Aircraft. That's just what I did. I made a list of how I imagined these other four sales training organizations would be selling themselves. What would they be saying to these people from Mitsubishi? Things like, well, we're the best. We're experienced in aircraft sales. Or maybe we're pilots and we know aviation. Or we have all the answers to your problems. Or we have a proven sales training program. Now, once that list was done, the plan became quite simple. Don't say or do any of that. Now, next came positioning. When to present. Now, because the other four were coming from out of town and they wanted to leave early, it wasn't difficult to convince the decision makers to let me go last. By the way, keep that thought in mind. When you get into a competitive situation, last is usually best. They have seen all the others, and they know what's being offered. In the series You Can Speak with Impact, I'm going to be covering a lot of ideas on this concept. Well, the day of the presentation came. Each of the five sales trainers was given 30 minutes to present, followed by 15 minutes for questions by the Mitsubishi decision makers. Finally, my turn came, and in a very serious and subdued manner, I stood in front of the group, and my opening statement was this to the five decision makers. Number one, don't hire me to do the sales training. Number two, I don't have all the answers. Number three, I'm not a pilot. Number four, I have no sales training program. Well, their jaws dropped. A few of them looked totally confused. One even scratched his head. Well, after that fourth statement, I paused for the count of three. I smiled. I looked at them and enthusiastically said, number one, don't hire me to do the sales training. Unless you're looking for a totally customized and guaranteed program. Number two, I don't have all the answers. Because if I did, I'd have a booth on top of Camelback Mountain, right over there, and I pointed out the window to the mountain. And you'd climb up, give me a pile of money, and I'd solve all your problems. So since I don't have all the answers, I have a lot of questions. And that will help me focus on your specific needs. Number three, I'm not a pilot. Most likely, I never will be a pilot. And therefore, I'm going to bring a fresh perspective to your sales training program because your prospects aren't buying an airplane. They're buying transportation, a time saver, a device to get them from point A to point B quickly, comfortably, and safely. You see, I'm your prospect, not a pilot. So I can think like a customer. And number four, I have no sales training program off the shelf that I've used with my other clients, like Cessna Aircraft or America West Airlines or General Motors or the over 735 other groups I've spoken for since 1974. What I will do for you is create a totally customized and highly focused program that's guaranteed or you don't pay for it. And then with a giant smile, my hands held in an open position, I said, how does that sound to you? Well, they looked at each other, talked amongst themselves for a minute, and then the leader said, when can you start, Joel? Smiling, I said, when would you like me to begin? Well, right away, if you can, was the reply. Sure, I said, and we can begin by discussing some specifics, if that's okay with you. And off we went into an in-depth discussion for the next 40 minutes of exactly what they wanted to accomplish, how many sessions it would be, where they would be held, and who would attend. Now, please don't think I'm bragging here. I don't mean to. What I am telling you is that if you decide right now to find out what everybody else is doing and don't do it, you'll be totally unique. In this case, all four of the other competitors were so similar. They all sounded the same. And by the time my turn came, they automatically expected more of the same. But that didn't happen. Instead, it was something totally creative and unique. Oh, and by the way, after I got their commitment verbally to proceed, everything, of course, was spelled out in a written agreement, including the guarantee. And by the way, that guarantee is exactly the same one we have given every seminar client. In the series on You Can Speak with Impact, you're going to hear me describe in detail how it works. And you're going to find it helpful in what you do, too. So decide now to stand alone. Be unique and creative. No matter how many competitors you have, what their price is, what their terms are, not one of them has you. And that's your creative edge, what you bring to the transaction. Okay, the next quality is personality. This includes your appearance, your mannerisms, and your manners, your bearing, your tone, your sincerity, and the depth of your commitment. How do your customers and prospects respond to you as a person? If you're the kind of person most people like being around, like my friend Jim Hayes, you'd earn a full point. If, on the other hand, you're the kind of individual who can get in a fight in an empty room, no points here. Or if you're the kind that brightens a whole room when you leave, well, you know that kind of person. They carry a dark cloud with them wherever they go. No points here for that kind of personality. You know, when it comes to the qualities of creativity and personality, Victor Kiam comes to mind. You might remember him from his TV ads for his electric shaver and his famous line, "I like the shavers so much, I bought the company." Well, he wrote a book, Going For It, How to Succeed as an Entrepreneur. And Victor describes how his personality and creativity helped him early in his career as a sales representative for Lever Brothers, selling Pepsodent toothpaste, whose market share was being threatened by a new brand of toothpaste. Now, Victor was desperate to defend Pepsodent's position, so he scheduled a sales call with McKesson Corporation, at that time the top drug and toiletries distributor in the United States, to encourage their sales force to push his toothpaste to their drugstores and supermarket customers. On the day of his presentation, 35 other reps were also scheduled. Hearing this, Victor decided that drastic, dramatic action was required. The day of his presentation came. He was the 15th on the list of sales representatives. Sitting outside the presentation room with a large covered item he kept hidden, he reviewed his notes, carefully fine-tuned his presentation. He was now prepared. So when his name was called, he entered the room and uncovered what he was carrying. It was a cage with a trained monkey inside. He opened up the cage door, picked up the monkey, put it on his shoulder, and looked around at the group of bewildered McKesson executives and boldly said, "I'm here for Pepsodent. I have a monkey on my back. It's time I got him off." Victor then tossed the monkey onto the meeting table and watched with glee as it ran around the table, knocking over glasses and disrupting papers. After a few minutes of havoc, Victor retrieved his monkey, held him in his hands, and said, "Thank you for your time. And remember one thing, push Pepsodent." And out he went. Well, during the next few weeks, as Victor visited his retail customers, the ones the McKesson reps called on and sold to, he'd hear things like this: "Hey, Victor, the McKesson guy was just in, and the first thing he talked about was you and your monkey. It was the most exciting sales presentation he'd ever seen, and he talked more about Pepsodent today than he had in the last year." Victor's mission was accomplished, and his product survived the competitor's threat. Now let's stop right here. The point of this story isn't to go out and get a monkey for your next sales call. The point or the principle is not to be afraid to stand out, to be unique, and to express your own personality. The fifth quality is organization, or organizational ability. A salesperson is usually only as good as the records he or she keeps. You can earn a full point here if you have the ability to organize and control your time and activities, your support material, your brochures, your catalog sheets, and your presentation material. I mean, remember how Willie had his map, his Graceland pictures, his Memphis history, all organized in plastic-covered pages in a leather folder right next to him in his cab. His entire presentation was very well planned and organized. And he also gave me an estimated time of arrival, 20 or 25 minutes to reach the Hyatt. Do you operate on a time commitment with your prospects? Do you say things like, "Mr. Prospect, it'll take me about 9 minutes to explain how, and whatever you plan on doing. And if I'm here longer than 9 minutes, it'll only be because you asked me to stay." And then by being organized, you can honor your commitment. Another aspect of organization is the ability to know your numbers. To earn a full point for the quality of organization on our 10-to-win rating system, you should keep accurate records. Because by keeping accurate records of your contacts, sales presentations, and sales, you can calculate your CPC. What's CPC? That's your commission per contact. Whether you're paid an actual sales commission or a straight salary, or a combination of the two, commission and base salary, you still have a CPC. The question is, do you know what yours is? I mean, how many dollars do you earn for every prospecting contact you make? To figure your closing percentage, let's suppose that you made 10 sales out of 50 presentations in a month. That's 1 out of 5, or 20%. If your commission is, let's say, $500 a sale, that's $5,000 a month. Now, using those same figures, I would rather you work with your CPC, commission per contact. If you earn $5,000 for 50 presentations, that's $100 a presentation. But if it takes you 5 contacts, whether by phone, email, or direct face-to-face methods, to get an appointment and make a presentation, that works out to $20 per contact. So your CPC is $20. I hope I'm not throwing too many numbers and figures your way too fast. But how would you like to get paid in the future? $20 for making each contact, $100 for every sales presentation, or $500 for every sale? Well, you know, most commissioned salespeople envision that big $500 amount coming in, and they feel pretty good, especially if it's at the beginning of their 50 contacts. But what if, using our example of 10 sales out of 50 presentations, or the 250 contacts it took to get the 50 presentations, all 10 sales came in after the 240th call? Well, most salespeople would be so disgusted and discouraged by now. 240 contacts and nothing? What if, however, you mentally had paid yourself on a CPC basis, and after the 240 contacts, you said to yourself, okay, self, now, I don't have any sales, but I've earned 240 $20 bills. Self, that's $4,800. That's a pretty good month for a beginner. Now, of course, on the next 10 sales calls, even though they're all sales, you still only get $20 each. If I had known the CPC concept way back in 1967, when I began selling, my early days would have been so much less stressful and so much less discouraging. So consider the CPC payment plan for yourself. Now, what if you're on a salary? Well, you may think you're on a salary, but you're not. You're still on a commission. Nearly everyone is. And your income is going to match your contribution, your efforts, eventually. So if you're a salaried salesperson, you can still figure your CPC by dividing your salary by your total number of contacts. By now, you probably can see that this quality of organization, which includes record keeping and knowing your percentages, is very important. And that's why it's worth a full point in the 10-to-win game, because it shows you where you are and where you're going. Now, you might be thinking right now, Joel, are these numbers really that important? Well, as an example, one of my clients, a retail chain, was having a problem. Its salespeople were becoming complacent. Now, store sales were great, they were dominating the market, and the salespeople were earning excellent income. I mean, what more could they want? So the salespeople were asked this question at one of their weekly sales meetings. What's your closing percentage? Of all the people who walk into our store as prospects, how many do you sell? Well, the response was a confident 80%. I mean, they were good and they knew it. They were then asked if they would go along with a test to verify that. Well, sure, they said. A number of part-time people were then hired to work in two shifts, to sit by the front door and actually count how many people came into the store. That way they could tell if the same person was going out to their car and coming back in again, which an electric eye counter couldn't do. Once they had an accurate count of the number of prospects coming in the door, they simply had to count up the number of sales tickets written each day. And those two numbers revealed a very accurate closing percentage. Now here are the actual figures for a one-week period. Total number of prospects in the door, 1,873. Total number of sales tickets, 402. Closing percentage, are you ready for this? 21.5%. Wow, they were shocked. 21.5%. What happened to the 80%? It was just a guess, and in this case, it was a very unrealistic guess. Now, what's your prospecting and closing percentage? I mean, how do you know? Are you just guessing? Or have you kept accurate records? Decide now to begin accurate record keeping, so you won't be tempted to fool yourself. Beginning today, start keeping an accurate count. How many people do you talk to about your products? How many presentations result? These two numbers will give you your prospecting percentage. Then, how many sales do you make? This will give you your closing percentage. The goal should be to increase your percentages. One study done for a national organization showed that salespeople were closing over 75% of their prospects. The problem was that the company was going broke and the salespeople were starving. No money. You see, a 75% closing ratio is great. But if you see only four people in a month, even if you get three sales, I mean, that's just not enough. The key is balance, making enough good calls and enough good prospects. When you increase the number of contacts, you run the risk of reducing the quality. But remember, if you reduce the number of contacts and don't increase their quality, you run the risk of being a great high percentage closer and starving to death. See, it's kind of like baseball. Percentages are important, but they can also be misleading. One famous baseball player was a great base stealer. In one season, 66% of his attempted steals were successful. Another excellent player was successful too, 96% of the time. Now, who is better? Which one would you want on your team? Well, to answer the question, you need to know all the figures. Baseball legend Ty Cobb was our 66% base stealer. He stole 96 bases out of 144 attempts that year. Max Carey was our 96% base stealer. He stole 53 bases in 55 attempts that year. Yet Cobb became the famous one, not because of his percentage, but because he succeeded 96 times. The key again is balance. Good calls on good prospects. Now, you don't need to win all the time. You just need to keep in the game and improve gradually. And you will improve if you're well organized. So those five personal qualities again, attitude, self-motivation, creativity, personality, and organization, are going to be worth 1 point each in our 10 to win game plan for a total of 5 points. And just a word about honesty. This is a quality that should be a given. It shouldn't even have to be listed. Just remember that if a salesperson isn't honest, you take his or her score and multiply it by zero. Anything times zero is zero, nothing. Oh, and watch out that you don't use this phrase. Let me be honest with you for a minute. Oh, why? Have you been lying up till now? Tell the truth. Period. The remaining points are based on the professional qualities beginning with prospecting skill, which we're going to discuss in this session and in message number 4. The next quality is presentation skill, which is detailed in messages 5 and 6. And then comes closing ability, which is the topic of messages 7 and 8. The 9th quality is the ability to handle objections, which is going to be the thrust of messages 9 and 10. And finally, we have the 10th quality of being service-minded. This helps you become aware of how much you've really helped your customers and clients, which in turn helps you maintain your positive attitude, your million-dollar attitude. And of course, by providing excellent service, you'll achieve even greater believability and trust and receive even more highly qualified referrals, which is covered in messages 11 and 12. Now imagine that you're a sales manager who wants to hire a new salesperson. How would you like an applicant like this? This individual has a positive, expectant, and enthusiastic attitude, is highly self-motivated, has specific realistic goals. He or she is creative, has a charismatic personality, is well-organized, is highly skilled at prospecting for new business, has a planned, scientific, and very professional sales presentation, including powerful qualifying questions, is a persistent closer who knows how to handle objections and turn them into selling opportunities. And finally, after making a sale, this individual always follows up with creative service and as a result generates numerous highly qualified referrals. Well, what would you think if you could hire a person like this? Well, you'd be thrilled. But forget it. Most likely such an individual just doesn't exist. What does exist is a salesperson with some of these qualities, maybe 5, 7, or sometimes 9 of them. And of course, anyone's score can vary from day to day, so it's important to check your list daily. One innovative sales pro told me she loved the 10-to-win concept so much that she checked the score each day before she left her home to sell. In her bedroom was a full-length mirror, and off to one side she taped up 10 index cards, each one containing her list of the qualities she felt was the most important for her. Once she was dressed and ready to go out and sell, she'd look in the mirror and go through a point check. If she was having a personal conflict with anybody and her attitude was down a bit, no point there. If she was feeling discouraged from a difficult week and her joyful personality wasn't up to par, no point there. And so on. Well, you get the idea. Every day is different. And your score may vary from day to day. Now remember, it's vital for you to make your own list. Now, some additional qualities you might want to add are time and territory management, or product knowledge, especially if you're in a high-tech industry, or stamina, if you're in a physically demanding sales position, or negotiating skill, if that's critical to your work. Inventory could be one to add to your score. I mean, hey, if you don't have anything you can sell, the other qualities might not count for much. Commitment might be another. How far will you go? What are you willing to do to improve and grow, and then to get it right? Well, here's a story from the past that will illustrate what commitment to excellence means. No matter how old or young you are, you've probably heard the name Charlie Chaplin, called in the early days of motion pictures the funniest man in the world. Charlie Chaplin was born way back in 1889, and in 1918, at the age of 29, he was earning $1,075,000 a year, an unheard-of amount in that era. But he was worth every penny, because his movies revived the theaters of his day. His personal life was kept pretty private. Yet in a rare interview, he gave a glimpse into his level of personal commitment to produce a product of great comedy. Here's what Charlie Chaplin said. Let me read it to you. When I'm watching one of my pictures presented to an audience, I always pay close attention to what they don't laugh at. If, for example, several audiences do not laugh at a stunt that I meant to be funny, I at once begin to tear that trick to pieces and try to discover what was wrong in the idea or in the execution of it. If I hear a slight ripple at something I had not expected to be funny, I ask myself why that particular thing did get a laugh. In a way, my research is really the same as a merchant observing what people are buying or doing. Anyone who caters to the public has got to keep his knowledge of what the people like fresh and up to date. Charlie Chaplin's success can't be attributed to talent alone. I mean, he worked harder than almost anybody else in the business of selling laughs. And on one occasion, he filmed one short scene 435 times before he was satisfied with his final product. Like Thomas Edison with his inventions, Chaplin just shrugged off 434 stunts that just didn't work right. In the business of selling, like the business of comedy, we're challenged almost every day by ever-changing tastes and preferences of our audience, the customer. A top-selling feature or a top-closing technique that worked yesterday may not work as well today. And we probably can't perfect our knowledge of what our customers want. We can only work harder at updating our knowledge of what people like. Yes, it's true, whether you're making people laugh, making great movies, or selling what you sell. So here's what you can do. Number one, decide which type of prospects you spend the most time with, A's, B's, or C's, and focus on the A's, the gold ones. Number two, make a list of the qualities, the personal and professional qualities that add up to 10 for you. Three, determine your CPC. Know what each contact and presentation is worth to you in dollars and cents. Number four, dare to be unique. Be creative and innovative, and get that monkey off your back. Number five, you don't have to be a comedian or an actor to learn from Charlie Chaplin's commitment to excellence. I mean, 435 times to get it right. That's a commitment. And number six, use the power of 10 to win. When we began this message, you heard me use a story about the prospectors of the Old West and how they searched for gold. Well, gold continues to be highly valued. It's what we used to use as a nation to back up our paper currency until we abandoned the gold standard in 1933. Now we just use it as a form of reserve. And the United States has the largest reserves of gold of any nation on earth. At last count, 261,710,000 troy ounces. Now that's a lot. That's 8,973 tons of solid, pure gold. Now, if you took all the gold from Fort Knox, from the Federal Reserve Bank in New York City, and all the other hiding places, and brought it to your town on your street, it would make a cube 25 feet wide, 25 feet long, and 25 feet high. That's it. One gold expert said in a recent article that if you took all the gold that was ever mined and refined in the history of the world, that cube would still only be 50 feet by 50 feet by 50 feet. I mean, that's big, but it's not that big. Isn't that amazing? Well, why is gold so valuable on Earth? Well, you could say because of its unique physical qualities. I mean, it's beautiful. Its density, its resistance to chemicals, its softness. Oh, boy, it's soft. Because just 1 ounce of pure gold can be beaten so thin and flat that it can cover an area of 100 square feet. That's less than 1/282,000th of an inch thick. The Golden Temple in India is covered with 881 pounds of gold leaf. I mean, that's an amazing sight. Or just 1 ounce of gold can be stretched to a very thin, fine wire 50 miles long from an ounce of gold. Now, as impressive as all this is, that's not the reason gold is so valuable. The reason it's so valuable is because it's so hard to find. It's very scarce. There's just not that much of it around. And the same is true for salespeople who join the top 1% club, who prepare, and prepare even more, and who know how to win the game of 10 to win. Be so good at what you do that you stand alone in your organization so that you're scarce, a one-of-a-kind sales pro, and make it a great day.